Allah.
The more I know, the more I know I don't know, so that my
You can't catch up.
My knowledge compared with my ignorance is shrinking phenomenally.
Right. Yeah.
Scary is what it is. You know, eventually, if you live long enough, you just wouldn't know anything.
I think I'm there already.
Yeah, I believe you are, as a matter of fact.
But, but I don't know it because I don't know
that's right.
anything.
You're not
I just think I think I'm there.
You think you're there. That's good. Well, the telephone number's calling here if you'd like to discuss something or anything to do with the economy or your portfolio or investing in general or things of that ilk. Would be 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Anywhere within the sound of his voice.
Or your voice. Or our voices together.
Yeah, something like that.
Do you think we go further on the radio reception if we speak together loudly? Sorry, your reception is bad. Okay, let's speak louder.
I'm going to have to think about that. I think it actually works the other way around. If you speak loudly enough, it reduces the, it increases the modulation and decreases the conceptual understanding.
Right. Well, I definitely know when you're in a foreign country, if someone can't understand you, if you speak louder, it seems to work. You just scream at them a lot and things happen, so they must understand you if you're louder.
Are you saying that Congress is a foreign country?
Maybe.
there's
a truth in there somewhere.
Yeah, there's a border at the Beltline.
I think we should stop saying Congress and just say government is a foreign country.
Government. Yeah. Anyway, telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
Well, you know, I noticed that I didn't notice some things.
You noticed this. Which did you not notice about what you noticed?
Well, I used to get really excited when when a new GDP number would come out, and it was very, very unexpected or something like that, and I would think, ooh, that's really important. And on November 7th...
2 days ago.
Newspapers reporting that the gross domestic product had been reported to be 2.8% annualized rate of growth.
Yep. Saw that.
And I didn't even pay any attention to it.
Well, it's important stuff. Who in their daily lives does not think about what the GDP growth rate is
obviously,
at any given moment?
I am one of them, and that's really, on a scale of 1 to 10, that's really strange.
The other day I was in the grocery store, and as I was picking up a carton of eggs, I thought, GDP is at 2.8%. I'm sure that's normal.
Well, particularly when you're picking up a carton of eggs.
Why did you bring that up? What is it about it that you didn't notice that you noticed?
I didn't notice until I actually wasn't paying enough attention until today to notice that the GDP had been reported is up 2.8%.
Yeah, that's something that things that are covering that up, you know, all the news media is covering everything else, but that is a really good piece of information.
Well, it's the fascinating thing is that on Wednesday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped about 1%, and then on Thursday, after very carefully noting the fact that A, the GDP is at 2.8%, B, the employment came in as we created a heck of a lot more jobs than anybody anticipated.
So the market said, oh no, we're doing well, let's go down for a little bit.
It did. It dropped, the Dow dropped 153 points.
Which it then
on all that good news
and covered the next day,
and then the very next day with no significant news,
jumped back up.
It was up 168 points.
Right.
I'm really glad I missed all of that because it wound up doing nothing with a great deal of vigor on a couple of days.
Should we try to explain that? Should we try to explain the rationale, at least what the commonly held belief is?
You think you understand why that happened?
No. Well, I'm going to explain what the common belief is.
When did you first start seeing little fairies on the ground?
Right. First, I'm going to say that what I'm about to say is all balderdash. It is unknowable.
You are balder than most dashes.
Yes, I am quite balder.
Yes.
Next, I'm going to say that this is the commonly held opinion of news anchors, which
is balderdash.
I just repeated myself, didn't I? And the commonly held belief is that we had the GDP report come out and the unemployment figures come out, which has an impact on the market. The market went up. The next day, the market went down. Well, the news anchors go, we've got to have some reason to say, why did the market, well, yesterday we had a reason, so we can say. And GDP figures and unemployment figures can cause the market to go up. The next day, it drops. Anchors go, we need a reason. Oh, I have a reason. The economy is doing really well, and that's why the market went down. Because there are people out there that don't want the economy to do well, because if it does well, then the Fed will stop doing its quantitative easing.
QE3.
And if that happens, then that means that the economy is doing well. And
well, let me read what Barron's.
It's just silliness.
What Barron's? There's a column in Barron called "The Trader," which kind of sums up what happened in the market during the week. And it said the downdraft was caused by a surprise move by the European Central Bank to cut interest rates, and news that the U.S. gross domestic product grew 2.8% in the third quarter, much higher than expected.
Okay.
The downturn in the market, we lost 1% in the market,
mm-hmm.
because the European Central Bank cut interest rates and our GDP was growing pretty fast compared with what people thought.
So the same reasons that we went up, we went down.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And this is what they said. This is what the guy in Barron says.
Yeah.
While an ECB rate cut might have been expected to buoy equity investors, the market took it badly, an indication that European economic growth, thought to be recovering, isn't improving. Better yet, U.S. GDP growth, therefore, ought to be good for stocks, except that investors fear it will prompt the Federal Reserve to begin tapering its monthly $85 billion worth of bond buying.
Yeah. Well, here is the reality. Let's move away from balderdash for a little bit.
Okay.
The reality is that most trading in the market is not day trading. And I realize that is the news that gets covered all the time. That today the market moved like this and it was because people were doing X, fill in the blank. And it's the same X that they were doing yesterday that had an opposite result. The reality is that just like you listeners, most of the trading that takes place in a portfolio takes place because you have long-term goals that you're trying to meet. Not because the European Central... I mean, think about it this way. Did you buy or sell Ford stock because the European Central Bank lowered or raised interest rates at any point in your life? If anybody's ever hold... You just don't do it that way.
I've never bought or sold Ford
stock. Either buy. I'm using it as an example. I mean, people don't buy stocks or sell stocks in the United States based on whether or not the European Central Bank has moved up or down. Now, there is a sentiment that's measurable that we can say, all right, we're happy about this, we're sad about that.
I think the hedge funds do that kind of
thing. They do. Yeah, absolutely. But even though the hedge funds are pretty big, if you look at the overall size that they represent versus the 401ks and the mutual funds that make up the vast majority of the wealth of the United States, they're not making their moves day to day based on whether or not the Europeans have changed their mind on what their central bank is charging their smaller banks for lending rates on a day-to-day basis. Okay. It does have an impact on the market. There is a sentiment that goes around, but the reason why the market was up 1% and then down 1% and then back up 1% is anybody's guess. It's kind of like if you have a whirlwind and you throw some paper in it, and sometimes the paper goes down and sometimes the paper goes up. You can't really tell what exactly caused that to happen. What you can say longer term is the whirlwind is moving kind of that direction over there. The minute movements are unpredictable, and that's the balderdash that I wanted to lay to rest. And
well,
since we are balder and quite dashing, or at least we dash sometimes.
At least from my perspective, the interesting thing that occurred next was the next day the Labor Department released. So the market went down, okay?
Okay, the market went down because
because
GDP was up.
GDP was up, and interest rates were likely to come down in the European region.
Okay, so both of those are really good news.
But they caused the market to go down. Then,
right.
Then the next day, the Labor Department said payrolls rose by 240,000, 204,000. Better yet, they revised earlier estimates to raise a 0 month to 132,000 new jobs. So the market on Friday started to fall on that, and then, and this is really good, people, apparently the people who are buying and selling, who caused the daily market movements, this is a quote again from Barron's, parse the data more closely, finding that jobs created were of a, now listen to this, low quality, part-time nature, and that folks are still dropping out of the labor force. Now, wait a minute. Doesn't that sound absolutely wonderful, folks? Then, as soon as the word spread...
I detected sarcasm there. Yeah.
As soon as the word spread that the new jobs were low quality...
Oh, these aren't good jobs.
...and people are dropping out of the labor force in droves, the market rose 1%.
All right. Well, we can easily give you real reasons for why those jobs existed and what happened with the labor force.
I like what it says in the column. It says, the frequent turnabouts suggest that Mr. Market seems to have ADHD.
Yes. Yes.
Which, for those of you who don't know what that is, it's attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. But the thing is, over the week, we got a 1% rise in the market.
Overall, yeah.
The S&P 500 is setting at a new record, which is always a fairly nice thing, I guess, to have. The S&P 500 is sitting there at 15,000. I mean, the Dow is sitting at 15,761.78, and the Standard & Poor's 500. Actually, the S&P 500 was less ADHD. It was only up 0.5%, but it was up to 1,770.61. Now, why is that? By the way, the NASDAQ, which is normally the most volatile of the bunch,
mm-hmm,
was virtually unchanged.
Well, virtually. Virtually. It was unchanged.
Right. Well, it was a percentage of 3,919.23, which, just for the record, folks, the NASDAQ was over 5,000 in early 2000. It's
the year
creeping,
2000,
in
yes.
The year 2000, is creeping up on 4,000 today. So when you look at your portfolio and...
You've done better than that? Good job.
You beat the NASDAQ. there is a new and different, for those of us who were raised in the bull market, people who came on board in the bull market, there is a new and different environment out there. I certainly won't call it the new normal, because it's obviously going to reverse itself at some point.
There is no such thing as normal. So when someone says the new normal, there is no such thing as normal. It may last a week.
It's just gross.
Is that normal?
It's just gross. Bill, specifically.
Bill.
Yeah. The other thing that that I saw was a very, very, very good article in Barron's again, where Ed Yardini was interviewed at length.
We always like it when Yardini's being talked about or talking.
He made a very interesting prediction, which is going to be easy to remember to see if it works out. He said the S&P 500 will hit 2014 in 2014.
That makes sense.
It's at 1,700 now.
No, it's almost 1,800.
It's almost 1,800, but 1,700. So it's in the 1,700 range today. So that's a pretty fair increase between now and then.
That's really only a couple of hundred points when you consider that yesterday was up 23.
But it's what he's saying, and for whatever it's worth, I tend to agree with him, and also with Bob Johnson at Morningstar, who I would encourage anyone and everyone to read if you want to know if you want to read an economist who obviously is extremely brilliant because he agrees with me so often.
Absolutely.
Bob Johnson at Morningstar, who is in there almost every day with something at Morningstar.com, has some great comments about the economy. They're lengthy, they're technical, but doggone has he been right consistently over time. And he is also of the opinion that we are in an extended slow growth economy. Yardini, on the other hand, had some concerns about a melt-up.
A melt-up?
Yes. Where something happens.
That seems like a mixed metaphor somehow.
You know, something like maybe a budget gets passed by Congress.
That's not likely to happen, actually.
That's right up there with raising from the dead virgin birth and things like that.
Cure for cancer. Yeah.
So he's concerned that we may be not too terribly far from a melt-up where there's a sudden stampede into the market.
Like, oh, we're getting our act together. That's unheard of.
You know, which sounds a little strange, him being concerned about it. But he said, we're in a long-term bull market, and I have a tendency to agree with him. That doesn't mean that we're not likely to see some corrections along the way. For whatever it's worth, the market is still undervalued, not by anywhere near as much as it used to be, but it's still down a bit. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Hey, Rick and Salado.
Hello, Rick.
Rick Von Salado. Yes.
Hey, the stuff that you're talking about as far as the current financial
insanity. Right, the current version of ADHD in the markets, yes.
Versus the previous version of ADHD in the market.
Right.
Okay. The stuff that you see on the Drudge lately?
Which stuff? Drudge is full of stuff.
Maybe the president's not doing so good on his primary agenda. But
he doesn't have to go through primaries anymore.
Yeah, no.
Well, let me address that really quickly, and this is good stuff.
Yep.
The economy and the market in lame duck sessions tends to actually do better.
Yeah, that's what I understand. But hey,
so we can look at it. And it, last time around, last lame duck session, it was Bush, and this was kind
he wasn't
of
a, doing too well on his primary agenda.
Right. No, I mean if both Bush and Obama have
fiasco.
Oh no! Now, first off, understand something. Everything's a fiasco.
Yes.
That's, yeah, it is.
Everything is.
World War II was a fiasco.
Yeah. Just read the headlines going back as far as you want.
Yeah. And
during lame duck sessions, you're going to find fiascos everywhere.
I mean, everything's a fiasco. And
that doesn't downplay that they are fiascos.
You know,
it's just everything's a fiasco.
It is. The issue is we're concerned about investing and people's portfolio values and things of that nature. And despite all the yelling and screaming, there's a fact here in place, and that is that there is a law on the books. It's going to happen. So the fact that the media go hysterical about something means nothing.
Well, it does mean something.
Well, it means nothing to...
For my perspective, it means that
for long-term economic well-being of a person's investment portfolio.
Yeah, so what it means is if you have stock or bonds or something in news corporations, they're doing very well right now. The readership is up right now because
Rupert Murdoch is doing very well.
Yes, he's making lots of money at this moment. If you look at what the founders of Google have just founded some new media sites, they're buying into newspapers and such.
Right. Brought the Washington Post.
Yeah, I mean, what we're talking about here is that the return to profitability for media, because if you can focus on enough bad news, people want to read it.
Yeah.
Okay,
and that's what's going on.
Sure.
Would it be good to invest in coal right now?
It all depends on whether you have a coal-burning furnace.
I have another question for you.
Push right now is to get rid of.
Well, I have a question for you.
What I'm saying is you buy low and sell high. When is this market going to drop?
Okay. Well, first question for you is, do you have kids?
No.
Okay. Well, then that kind of cancels that out. I was going to say you could use it in the stockings at Christmas.
Yeah, you can use coal in stockings.
Buying commodities, I'm very happy that you asked that question because I wanted to talk about commodities. I really wanted to bring this up. Coal is going to be around for a while, no doubt about it. Oil is going to be around for a while.
Well,
we don't have anything to replace them seriously. We've got natural gas.
They have been around literally for hundreds of millions of
years. Yeah, I think they'll probably be around for a while.
Yeah, okay.
As an investment vehicle, I put it in the same realm as stockpiling any other commodity. If you buy it, it's not going to change in its nature. What you're doing, if you buy that commodity, it's called arbitrage. You're hoping that you're smarter than other people. And you can be. You can make a lot of money doing that. So please don't get that wrong. People have made massive amounts of money in gold by buying at the right time. The difficulty is...
But somebody else lost the money.
Right. The difficulty is both sides of that transaction thought they were smarter than everybody else involved. And only one of the sides made money in it. So when they sold and when they bought, what I much prefer, which doesn't downplay the fact that there's possibility of making massive amounts of money in commodities. There's also possibilities of losing massive amounts of money in commodities. But we have kind of a rule of thumb. And we don't have many of those. We only have two thumbs, so we have to keep it few.
Yeah, we're only allowed to have two rules of thumbs per person.
Right. One of those is only invest in things that are actually creating a value that people are willing to pay for. If you want to buy coal, if that's really what you're doing, then go out and research a company that mines it and does it profitably in times when coal is hurting in times when coal is doing well. That makes sense to me. If you think of it in the terms of a small business, if you were deciding to take some money and found a small business, but you knew that half of the years your small business is going to do poorly and the other half of the years it was going to do well, so you just made the decision, well, in the good years, I'm going to sell the business. I'm just going to sell it. That's not what the business is for. Investment is a business.
Yep.
The business of making money consistently, not on guesswork of when is this going to be good and when is it going to be bad. If you're consistently making something that other people want, whether that's information or a service or a product or whatever, that beats long-term. The return on that is far better than a commodity.
You know what? The commodity in the world, by the way, it's a manufactured commodity, which I think is sort of interesting. The commodity in the world most in demand is?
What?
The dollar.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
So I would think that you should go out and work.
Make a lot of dollars.
And get them to pay you dollars.
That's what I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yep.
That'll work.
Now, maybe I'm zeroing in on a commodity. Maybe I should talk about an industry like power generation. How are they going to do the power generation when they're going to kill that goose that lays that golden egg?
Are you familiar with?
Are you killing? They're killing bees.
Are you familiar with?
The industry is the one that's really doing the electrical power generation. Is it not?
Are you familiar with T. Boone Pickens?
A little bit. Yeah, he's doing he did the windmill thing and then kind of like divested, didn't he?
Do you think he's a pretty smart guy?
I thought he was. I mean, he made money.
He did the windmill thing. He made a lot of money in windmills, and then he went solar.
Right.
And he fell on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Power generation.
Do you know what he's buying now?
I don't.
Water.
Water, okay.
Water. Yeah, that's the new oil. I understand that.
Water is the new. Don't tell that to me when I'm drinking it, please.
Okay.
All right, so this is the point that I'm bringing up here. Power generation is in a stall right now as far as technology goes. And I have to make this very clear. Solyndra is a good example of this. As long as there's huge amounts of subsidies from the government going into it, we are going to have an inefficient market.
Yeah.
It's going to be an inefficient industry. It is not profitable without subsidies to be in solar.
Yeah.
It's barely profitable to be in wind without subsidies. Because something popped up in the middle of this that was completely unexpected, and that was fracking. And I spent some time this week going back through some of our old CDs of the radio program. You'll appreciate this old baldy across from me. In 2005, so this is well into the war in Iraq, we were talking about the untapped natural resources in the United States in shale, that there was natural gas and that there was oil there, and if we could find a way to lower the price of getting it out, it would have a revolution in the market that would make the renewable energies either go out of business or develop in a way that would make them profitable. Well, now we have it. We have it. Fracking has taken place. We have natural gas that has dropped below the floor of anybody's rational expectation of what power generation would be.
Now, I think, by the way, you ask a question about coal, and I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah, the only reason why I ask...
Coal is going to see over time, I can tell you with a great degree of certainty, a substantial decline.
Yeah.
It's getting more expensive to get out of the ground. Unlike oil.
Easy stuff has been found. I mean, there's still some easy stuff out there.
And you have to get coal out of the ground inexpensively, you have to devastate the terrain. You have to remove mountains. And when you do that, a great deal of really, really, really bad stuff in the rocks that's just there all the time, but you expose it to the rainfall and the water, and it comes out and it goes into the streams. Unless you have some very expensive and, I might even add, fragile systems to keep from poisoning the people downstream. Poisoning people downstream used to be a very popular sport by coal companies. I remember going up
it's
in the Appalachians
on,
and these, West you see
Virginia.
These beautiful, beautiful streams and rivers. And the one thing, one of the reasons they were so beautiful is nothing was growing in them. No fish. No plants. Why?
No algae?
Because they're poisonous. And the people downstream, for some reason or other, weren't really thrilled about drinking that water.
There's just picky people. I don't understand that. Water is the new oil, I guess.
And there's just this reality. There's a long-term trend out there when you ask about investing in coal. It's like investing in anything else. If you're a speculator, you're trading on sentiment. You better do it faster than anybody else, and you better be bigger and better than anybody else. And I don't think that you qualify, neither do we. So the only way that an investor can get ahead of the high-speed, high-dollar speculators is, like you said, buy low, sell high. Yeah. Buy quality and simply hang on to it for a long time.
I have a statement to be. It's just from my life, so it's not studied, but it's a good point.
A non-self-examined life.
Right.
That's you, bud.
Right. While I was off in my studies in other states to learn more things and put more letters after my name and so on, one of the people in the program with me was a Russian, and he's a former Soviet algorithm producer.
He worked for Al Gore?
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
What he did and does is called, in the investment world, we call it a quant. He's a quant. What he did for the Soviet Union, and this sounds like I'm going way off the subject, but I will come back to it, I promise. It all makes sense. What he did for the Soviet Union is the Soviets were trying to track stealth technology. They didn't know how to follow our airplanes. So they were working with their radars. They were turning them very, very sensitive. They turned it all the way up, and they could see stealth. They could see that there was something there, but to the radar, it looked like a flock of birds or a dust cloud. It looked like debris, or maybe a bunch of leaves flew up in the air or something. So they brought in a bunch of mathematicians, and the Soviet Union had a lot of mathematicians. Russia is still famed for that. They have a very mathematically oriented minds. And this guy was one of them. And what he did was he put algorithms into the system, the radar system, to look for flocks of birds and dust clouds that were flying non-erratically, that were flying in the same direction.
And generally at a speed faster than blocks of birds
correct.
Fly.
Correct. And at altitudes, basically there were a lot of conditions, but it was a very complex mathematical algorithm to find things out there out of all the noise, and there's a lot of noise in the radar when you turn it that sensitive, because there are a lot of birds. There are a lot of dust clouds. In all that noise, they were finding something that had a purpose.
Yep.
Maybe multiple things that had a purpose. Well, when the Soviet Union fell down, most of those mathematicians became janitors or all kinds of very strange things. And Wall Street...
They're now making dust clouds.
Yes, yes. So Wall Street started hiring them because there's a lot of noise in the market, in commodities and in stock trading, day trading, moving things around back and forth. They started applying the same mathematical formulas towards inefficiencies in the market. When a hedge fund was buying or selling, when people were buying commodities at large amounts, they don't do it all in one purchase because that has a big impact on the market. They do it in lots of little purchases. Well, there's already lots of little purchases. So they're looking for the dust clouds that are flying at higher velocity and higher altitude and so on. If you're buying coal and you're expecting to find an inefficient market for the coal, there is an inefficiency in the market, but it's at split seconds now. It is in hundredths of a second, because there are people that have studied their whole lives to look for inefficiencies in the market, and they're utilizing it. So you can make a profit. You can do it. But that's your competition. If, on the other hand, you do what old Baldy was saying and what I said earlier, you find something that is consistently creating something that people are willing to pay for, that's a different thing altogether.
And we have to create something that people will pay for. They're called commercials.
Yes.
So we need to move on to that. Thank you very much for your call. Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that former Soviet fellow, by the way, is in commodities. That's why I brought him up. That's what he does for a living. And now we've got to play some commercials.
Yeah, which are sort of like commodities.
Sort of.
And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And we're here, believe it or not. And if you're still there after all those commercials, you're doing pretty well, too. Telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I did want to talk a little bit about commodities, not in the generalized sense, but in the sense that we all see when we look at the gas stations these days.
We see commodities when we look at the gas stations?
We do. We see at least the prices for them.
Oh, okay. The most widely reported commodity price in the United States is?
Gasoline. Although it may be right up there with milk.
And bread.
But
those aren't really commodities per se. But anyway, go ahead.
Gasoline, people have probably been noticing this, though it hasn't been hitting the news, which is kind of unusual.
Below $3 a gallon in a lot of places.
Right, and it's way below $3 a gallon in a lot of places. And that's kind of an expectation. Crude oil is trading at about $94.35, just as an estimate, per barrel. And again, I had some fun looking back over and listening to our previous radio programs. And back in 2005, we were talking about the cost of getting oil out of the ground, and the prices were up, way up, in the $150 range per barrel. And we were talking about that's absurd. It's overly expensive.
And it will cause the creation of new technology.
Right, and that will cause the creation of new technology. Well, that's what we've got as far as fracking. It has been that the reason why crude oil prices are down is because other energy-producing prices are down. And it's taking the strain off of crude oil. So if you look at the fact that this is something I said and you said, that the fair value of oil by the barrel should be right between $90 and $97 a barrel for the foreseeable future if we can get rationality back into the market. Well, it's at 95 now, 94.35.
Don't say that too loudly. Do you realize how many people just heard what you said?
That we told them that...
No, that it's rational.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's not rational.
And Heisenberg's uncertainty principle rears its ugly head. The act of observation
changes the thing observed.
And the fact that you commented on it means it will probably have something weird happen in the oil market in the immediate future.
Well, we have enough people listening that if they all got involved, we could make a difference in the oil market. But I doubt
We have enough people listening that if they all got involved, they could probably sit in a single automobile.
Oh, yes. Oh, that was me, wasn't it? I stopped listening about 10 minutes ago. Anyway, the crude oil prices are down where they should be if there was no threat to the supply. But here's the key.
Yes?
There's a threat to the supply. Iran is talking nuclear talks. Pakistan is talking nuclear talks with Saudi Arabia. We've got Syrian civil war. We've got Libya in chaos.
Syria is not exactly a major producer of oil supplies.
No, but if you look at what's going on in the Middle East right now, if you take the same situation and applied it at any other point in history, oil would be astronomically expensive, not coming on the downtime.
Let me tell you, my beautiful wife asked me, why is gasoline below $3 a gallon? Thinking I would have some profoundly deep wisdom, and I said,
oh, you've got some profoundly deep wisdom.
There
here.
Are two things, as far as I can tell, have no apparent relationship to reality. One of them is interest rates and forecasting the same, and the other one is the price of gasoline, because the price of gasoline came down without the price of oil coming down.
Well, here's the price of gasoline came down. Heating oil isn't going up, which is absolutely absurd because this is the time of year that heating oil goes up. And just for a side note, those of you that think we're talking really esoteric things most of the time, Facebook was funded at the beginning. The creation of Facebook was funded by one of the partners, one of the co-founders, had found a very simple way of making money before going off to college, before going to Harvard. And that was, if you invested in oil in the summer, heating oil, mm-hmm. and then you sold it in the winter,
right.
you could make a profit. So he made about $200,000 doing this over a several year period, where he would just buy it in the summer and sell it in the winter. Well, if you look at heating oil prices, that inefficiency is just about gone now. So it's another one of those things where the inefficiency has been seen and people are taking advantage of it. We're not seeing a spike in heating oil prices at the beginning of the cold area of our year. That is very strange.
Well, yeah. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Again, the telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400, the last commodity, and then I will hand you. Look like you've got something to say.
Go ahead.
Gold. Gold prices are way down from their peak.
So where's gold now?
Gold is now at about $1,300 an ounce, or more properly at $1,289 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
And it was up $300 more expensive than that, and it kind of hovered around the $1,600 area for a long time. People thought it was just going to keep going up.
Well, that's what the advertisements that were being run on this show kept saying. Gold could go to $2,000 an ounce.
Yeah.
You should buy your gold now.
We're predicting $2,000 an ounce by 5 minutes from now, basically. That sort of thing.
That's very much like the commercials say, if you call in the next 5 minutes and they run the same commercial.
Yeah, it's the same commercial that's
months.
Been playing for all year.
Yeah.
Call in the next 5 minutes and you get this deal. Well, yeah, if you call in any 5 minute period, you'll get that deal.
Right.
Gold is a commodity, and the demand for gold changes over time. And it's something interesting here. You said it to the caller. The number one commodity right now that is in the highest demand is the dollar.
Yes.
And a lot of if we really thought that the dollar were about to be replaced, I would expect to see gold prices going right back up to way up above.
Well, actually, the gold price wouldn't go up. It'd be the dollar value going down.
Against the gold. Yeah,
against gold.
Which would mean that the gold price for us would go up, not for everybody else.
You know, people are, and I've said this over and over again, and we just have a few minutes left in this hour, but I wanted to say something that I think is very, very, very critical to understand if you're going to be a successful investor. The world runs on dollars. I know that there are people who like to badmouth the dollar, who like to badmouth the United States economy, and they seem to be sort of concentrated around Fox.
Only now.
Yes.
It was over at MSNBC during Bush's
right.
era.
But if you're listening to people who say the United States economy is headed into the pits and it's going to collapse and the dollar is going to collapse and everything is going to collapse, folks, I just want to say that the people who look at this from the outside who have credibility because they've been right so often, like the writers at The Economist magazine, are in total opposition to that. And there's a very good reason for it. The entire world economy functions on the dollar. There's nothing else out there that even could do 10% of what the dollars do in the world today. One of the things a lot of people are afraid of is that the Chinese will dump their dollar holdings. Lord, what would they do? I mean, the other thing is
they have
really
about $4 trillion
right.
of holding.
That's the only thing that backs their economy.
They can't do that because their economy would crash. That's the only thing that's backing their money.
It's really important to understand that China is now a net importer of goods and services. They have a negative trade balance, which is perfectly rational at this point in their history, in their economic history. But they the yuan or renminbi actually, which they use as a currency, cannot exit the country. And the reason it can't exit the country is that they don't want people manipulating their currency from the outside. They don't want the rest of the world to have their currency.
They only want to manipulate it from the inside. They don't want everybody else.
You know, they recognize that who was the big speculator, the hedge fund guy and multi-gazillionaire who almost wrecked the
Soros.
George Soros. They don't want George Soros speculating in their currency and conceivably doing to them what happened to
the Great Britain
several
pound.
Other countries, including Indonesia. I mean, the entire government of Indonesia got thrown out over
long-term capital hedge fund right there.
So they're not going to do that. So when they buy things, they buy them with dollars. And the better the dollar is as far as its value is concerned in the world, two things happen. The Chinese, this is just one tiny little piece of this pie, but it's the one people seem to be worried about. From the perspective of the Chinese, having a strong dollar means they can sell things cheaply and they can have a strong currency to buy raw materials to make things with. They are so wrapped up in our well-being, it's astonishing. That's just one of many, many issues. Don't worry about it, folks.
Yeah.
It's working.
Just,
and we're about out of time for this hour.
Just as a side note, we'll talk about this more next hour. The third plenum is going on right now. Most people haven't a clue what I just said, but I will fill you in next hour.
Yeah, well, you've got to have a plenum in your heating and air conditioning system. And you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, we will be back next hour, Lord willing. But if you'd like to contact us off the air, you can reach us locally. We have a voicemail over the weekend. Of course, during the week, we're there, 947-1111. Or
you can also reach us toll-free. It's, again, it's voicemail. It's 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. Or you can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can also go to our webpage, The Personal Wealth Coach, or tpwc.com,
and I've had some,
and listen
several,
to some podcasts.
Yeah, I've had several people say, too bad you guys don't have podcasts. We'd love to listen to you. We do have podcasts on our website. That's
we actually monitor the listening rate.
tpwc.com. We do?
We've got a pretty good listening audience just on the web.
All five of them?
All five of them.
Yeah, well, that's really cool.
There's some multiple of five.
On your Fox News station, News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.